Line Automotive, friendly and affordable, located at 202 Park Street. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
Is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue Announcer, Jeff Smith.
And I am the Rogue Announcer, Jeff Smith. And this is Rogue Talk for October 16th, 2020. Great to be back in the studio. And this would be a good day. We're getting close to the election. There's all kinds of things going on in the news. Of course, COVID's been going on since late January, when we really first started talking about it a little bit. And then we got to early in March and everything kind of ground to a halt. And we've been dealing with it ever since. And of course, there's the Amy Coney Barrett nomination for the Supreme Court going on, all kinds of controversy with that. Not so much with her. She's fairly vanilla and non-controversial, at least if you prefer non-activist judges. But really, the hearings have been somewhat vanilla compared to what we've put up with many of the other previous nominees. I hate to say, but especially nominees from Republican presidents, they have been treated rather poorly over the last many years. And I mean, it goes all the way back to Bork, but it's kind of varied in the intensity. And so we can definitely talk about COVID. We can talk about Amy Coney Barrett a little bit. Part of COVID relief, the second COVID relief bill is still, well, I say bill, there's more than one that have been proposed in the different houses of Congress, and it's they're pretty far apart still. The president has his representative, Mnuchin, I guess he's the Treasury Secretary. I don't really keep track of all of these people's titles, but Steven Mnuchin is working with some of the leaders on that bill, and it's not really getting too far, so we can talk about that a little bit. But just crazy stuff going on. Of course, my favorite topic, which is the schools, there's not a whole lot to talk about. I may have mentioned the last time I was live on the air, I do have some stories that I'd like to cover related to the schools, but unfortunately, getting those things together a little more difficult because they simply aren't going to school right now. Most of the learning is being done online, and there's no sports, of course, which is obviously something that is one of my favorites. Just kind of hard, not too much going on, to really get into, you know, related to the schools, which is unfortunate. Again, that, this show is a community show, and we love, I love story ideas. So if you have something you want me to talk about, or you have somebody you would like me to interview, or anything related to Rogue River, you can do that. Go through the Rogue Talk as a Facebook page. You can send a message there. You can even post on there. I'm the king of the page, so if I don't like it, I'll take it down. But I don't think I've ever had to do that before. So you can post on the page if you would like to. But more importantly, you can go to Messenger there and you can send me messages of, you know, things you'd like to hear on the show, or guests that you think would be good. Again, it's COVID has turned everything upside down, and it's been a whole different thing. Another thing you can do, and we don't get a lot of people doing this, but uh, I I would love it if more would take advantage of this. Call into the show. If you're listening live and you got something on your mind, there's with the election coming up, there's so many things going on. You know, of course, there's local elections on up to the presidential election, and we forget about those. And, you know, we can talk about that a little bit. I think I'll talk about that maybe at the end of the show. You know, talk about the importance of the elections. And I'm not going to be talking about any specific issues locally or even state issues. I haven't dug into a lot of those yet. I will have to do that soon because I plan on voting on everything, not just top of the ticket. And I would encourage you to do the same. A lot of this stuff is pretty important, and we need to do it. But getting back to what I was saying, another thing you can do is call the show, and that number is 541-299-0498. 541-299-0498. And you can call at any time during the show when I'm live on the air, which I am today, and we can talk about any of the things we're talking about here, or we can talk about something else, and we'd love to hear from you. You can also email the show. That email would be feedback@943thebridge.com. Once again, feedback@943thebridge.com. Just make sure you put Rogue Talk, two words, Rogue Talk, in the subject line, and those will come to me, and I can answer questions or deal with issues through email as well. So, last night we were supposed to have a presidential debate, and instead we got a dueling town halls, and I haven't watched either one of them from minute one to however long they were. I think the Trump one was only an hour. I actually listened to more of that one only because I was in my truck and I listened to it on radio or on internet as I was coming home from Medford yesterday. But I've gotten to watch bits and pieces of both of them, and well, first of all, I don't know that we learned an awful lot last night on either side. A debate would have been much more useful, although we can all admit that that last debate was, well, let's say a train wreck. It was pretty awful. There are plenty of blame to go on both sides of that. It started off with the president doing a lot of interrupting, and then it just tailspin from there, and it was pretty awful. And there was actually some good points in there that were made, but they kind of got lost in the chaos. So I think we all would have liked to have seen another debate last night. Hopefully the third debate will go on next week, or I believe it's next week. Hopefully that will happen, that they won't find a way to get out of that. You know, this one that was supposed to go on yesterday was kind of a dodge, and the commission that does these debates, which I think should be gotten rid of or at least overhauled, and it's really a kind of a useless thing. They kind of decided that when the president got COVID, that they were going to make it an online, like a Zoom meeting. And any of you that are doing Zoom meetings for your work or for school, yeah, probably not a good idea. Other than the ability to completely mess up the Zoom stream with your custom Zoom background, it's not a very productive of tool, let's say, and not really the best idea for the debate. And of course, the president had been cleared as being not contagious, not no longer suffering from the disease. Even Dr. Fauci has looked over what what the president's team of doctors has said and agreed that he was not contagious, not shedding virus, and was safe to be out in the public. They could have had the debate, but the debate commission had already said, no, it's going to be an online debate. And of course, the president said he's not interested in that. And whether it's a good or a bad political decision, and that's very debatable, I understand his thought process. We've seen a bunch of evidence of Biden is struggling with some cognitive issues. You can call them age-related, but it's not completely accurate, because there are, as the president even pointed out, there are plenty of people that are older than former Vice President Biden who don't have the same cognitive issues that he's clearly suffering from. And I think I talked about this months ago on this show. I don't like the idea that they're still running him as their candidate, and I question what's going on in behind the scenes. You know, it's really troubling. But having said that, they've already, on more than one occasion, they've seen evidence and that the vice president or former vice president, even in interview or in an interview where like going on a news show and doing a quick interview where he's reading off of a teleprompter, he's a couple of times he's asked them to move up the teleprompter, whoever happened to be controlling it, whether it was one of his campaign people that controlled that or it was the news organization. I don't know how that all, you know, works. But so we know that even for an interview where you're supposed to be answering questions, you know, we know he's been using the teleprompter, and even then, sometimes on teleprompter, he's still struggled. And again, I don't take any joy out of this. I don't even want to talk about it, except he's running to be the president of the United States, which means, you know, if he wins, we give him the nuclear football. We put a lot of trust in his hands, and it's disturbing to me that we're in this situation. So the president had some legitimate complaints that, you know, it wouldn't be fair, it wouldn't be equal for both candidates if they did an online. And again, you can argue the politics of that. There's definitely some political drawback to pulling out of a debate, especially because you know, in the case of the president, you've left them plenty of reasons to cancel the next one. And that's not, you know, if you believe the polls, the president needs these debates. He needs to score some points. He needs to make up some ground. And, you know, it's so we'll see what happens next week. So anyhow, back to these. We had these dueling town halls, and the tenor, the tone were drastically different. George Stephanopoulos, now, to be fair, when George Stephanopoulos did a town hall with President Trump, it was very similar. I think he was a little bit harder on Trump than he was last night on Biden, but it was very similar. And Trump knew what he was going into when he went in to have that town hall with George Stephanopoulos at ABC. And the reason he did it was because Biden was basically hiding in his basement for much of the time. You know, there's many days where he comes out and makes a statement at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, and then the campaign says he's done for the day. And so, you know, Trump was trying to show, look, I'm out here, I'm being, you know, I'm doing my job and all of that. So, again, it's a risk, but it's understandable. But last night, if you contrast the two town halls, you've got another kind of vanilla George Stephanopoulos interview, and then you've got Savannah Guthrie, who realized that NBC was taking a ton of flack for even having the town hall. They felt like Trump pulled out of the debate, so it should be Biden's night, and you know, they were mad at NBC for even having the Trump town hall. And so Savannah Guthrie knew her job was go after the president and do everything you can to make him look bad, because your people, the people that watch your show, the people that support your network, are mad at you. And it was pretty obvious. I mean, you know, there's not really much you can argue about. If you look at both of those town halls, they were vastly different. And so that was kind of the stage that was set. I think the Biden one was an hour and a half, so it was still going after Trump finished up on NBC. ABC went another, I think it was another half an hour. And so, which was fine. Again, I would argue that the politics of pulling out of the debate were very risky. And this is part of what the president was risking by pulling out of that debate. But so that kind of sets the stage. You got it was almost a debate on NBC between the moderator, Savannah Guthrie, and President Trump, and more of a slow pitch softball game playing on the baseball diamond. And some of you will get that and some of you won't. So things were a little lower key, a little easier on the Biden side. And again, this is not necessarily a complaint, as it's just there was a sharp contrast. And again, some of this the president brought on himself. So, you know, that's the way it is. So when we come back, we're going to take a look at a few things from the debate and actually a couple things, or at least one of the things about Trump we'll look at wasn't a part of the debate, but still something to take a look at. So we'll do that when we come back.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. With SRN News, I'm John Scott. There's word of progress toward a compromised COVID-19 economic relief package. The White House and congressional Democrat negotiators have agreed to include a national coronavirus testing strategy, and the White House pressing Senate Republicans to agree to a package approaching $2 trillion. Prosecutors have provided enough evidence to move toward trial for five Michigan men accused of plotting to kidnap the state's governor, Gretchen Whitmer. The British government says trade talks with the European Union are effectively over and the country must prepare for a no-deal break with the bloc. That's despite EU leaders declaring that negotiations will continue. Stocks took a late tumble on Wall Street, erasing an early gain and leaving the major indexes mixed. The Dow gained 112 points. The NASDAQ dropped 42. The S&P 500 was up a fraction. This is SRN News.
Broadcasting to Rum River, Gold Hill, Weimer, and beyond. 94.3, The Bridge.
With SRN Sports, I'm Michael Harrington. Let's start with MLB playoff action from Thursday. The Braves rout the Dodgers to get within one victory of the World Series.
The Braves erupted for six runs in the sixth inning of a 10-2 win over the Dodgers. The game was tied 1-1 until Freddie Freeman and Marcell Ozuna hit consecutive RBI doubles. Dansby Swanson added a two-run double during the rally. Ozuna also belted a pair of homers and an RBI single for Atlanta. Braves starter Bryce Wilson was terrific over six innings, allowing just one hit while striking out five.
Once I got out there through the first pitch, you know, I felt, like you said, calm, cool, and collected. We were able to stick with the game plan. That helped a lot. Didn't have to think too much. Just execute pitches.
Wilson's only mistake was a third-inning solo homer by Edwin Rios. Clayton Kershaw was reached for four runs and seven hits in five-plus innings. I'm Dave Ferry.
Elsewhere, the Astros beat Tampa Bay 4-3. This is SRN Sports. NFL news, the Atlanta Falcons have shut their facility following a new positive test for the coronavirus. Defensive tackle Marlon Davidson was placed on the COVID-19 reserve list this week. The other case, not a player, we're told. The addition of that second unidentified person caused the Falcons to act out of caution. They say they'll probably be back and running today. The Chiefs have signed Le'Veon Bell 2 days after he was released by the Jets. The move gives the defending Super Bowl champs greater running back depth behind Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, who has been one of the league's most impressive rookies this season. NBA news, Tyronn Lue has agreed to become the next coach of the LA Clippers. He replaces Doc Rivers, who coached the Clippers for the last 7 seasons. Lue was on Rivers' staff this year when the Clippers wasted a 3-1 lead over Denver and lost in the Western Conference semis. Lue went 128-83 in parts of 4 seasons as coach of the Cavaliers. This is SRN Sports.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And we've been talking about the dueling town halls yesterday. And so let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that was said yesterday. And we'll start things off with a clip from the ABC town hall with former Vice President Biden. And we'll start with a question from one of the voters in the audience.
I'm the proud mom of 2 girls, 8 and 10. My youngest daughter is transgender. The Trump administration has attacked the rights of transgender people, banning them from military service, weakening non-discrimination protections, and even removing the word transgender from some government websites. How will you, as president, reverse this dangerous and discriminatory agenda and ensure that the lives and rights of LGBTQ people are protected under U.S. law?
I will flat out just change the law, eliminate those executive orders, number one. You may recall, I'm the guy who said, I was raised by a man who, I remember I was being dropped off. My dad was a high school educated, well-read man who was a really decent guy, and I was being dropped off to get an application in the center of our city, Wilmington, Delaware, the corporate capital of the world at the time. And these 2 men, I'm getting out to get an application to be a lifeguard in the African American community because there was a big swimming pool complex. And these 2 men, well dressed, leaned up and hugged one another and kissed one another. And I'm getting out of the car at the light, and I turned to my dad. My dad looked at me and said, "Joey, it's simple. They love each other." The idea that an 8-year-old child or a 10-year-old child decides, you know, I decided I want to be transgender. That's what I think I'd like to be. It may make my life a lot easier. There should be zero discrimination. And what's happening is too many transgender women of color are being murdered. They're being murdered. I mean, I think it's up to now 17. Don't hold me to that number, but it's incredible. It's higher now,
yeah.
And that's just this year. And so I promise you, there is no reason to suggest that there should be any right denied your daughter or daughters, whichever, if one or two.
One,
your daughter, that your other daughter has a right to be and do. None, zero.
Okay, so let's start with his answer to the question. She was asking about changes made in the military, changes made by the Trump administration regarding transgenders, and you know, there's some points there that you can argue about, but I, you know, I mean, when it comes to the military, I'm going to sound to some bigoted and sexist, and that's fine. These are my opinions. The military is no place for societal experimentation. And what I mean by that is the transgender issue is very different than even the gay and lesbian issue. And there's not a lot of science backing up what we're being told about transgenderism. Most of it is activism. It's not scientific. In fact, if you look at some of the limited science we have on transgenderism, it's fairly disturbing, actually. The suicide rate goes much higher with those that identify as transgender. Those that have had the surgery to have their gender changed, so to speak, the suicide rate gets even higher, and many of them want to reverse it down the road. So while the science is limited, I would say that having transgender people that identify as transgender, and yes, I'm going to use identify as, because we don't really know much about it, is not, the military is just not a place for that kind of confusion. And let's be honest, I mean, people can be very cruel, whether, you know, whatever someone's difference is, whatever the difference someone has, you know, people can be cruel, and they are cruel. Look at social media. It's a perfect example. People are awful on social media. So it's just not a good place for that kind of societal experiment. I think it's a little less clear with gay and lesbian. I think you do add some problems there with, you know, the rooming situations and that kind of thing. But I don't have the same reservations with gay and lesbian soldiers as I would with transgender soldiers. But I'm also one of those that still is not super comfortable with women in combat. And I know there's a lot of people that want to pretend there's no difference between men and women. And I'm just not one of those people. I'm okay in certain instances, but those instances mean that they're meeting the same standard and even in that situation, I have some trepidation because the natural inclination of men is to protect women. And so when you have women there in combat situations, it changes the dynamic. And I think it could be a dangerous situation. And I know we've been doing it for some time, but we also have some stories of problems. We also have some stories of some really good outcomes and some heroes. So again, these are all things that can be discussed. None of these are black and white issues. But putting all of that aside, so that was kind of a long tangent to get to the point of this answer is, this woman, if she truly believes her child is transgender, and the reason I say that is so often kids that we might identify as potentially transgender turn out to just be gay, or even not gay or transgender, just because a boy likes to play with his sister's Barbies doesn't mean that he's going to be gay, or doesn't mean that he's transgender. And so labeling an 8-year-old as transgender it's just wrong. Now, I don't put any malice on this mother per se. I don't know her story. I don't know how she considers her child to be transgender and what she's doing about it. But what we're talking about here is Vice President or former Vice President Biden. His answer to this is a non-answer in that it's perfectly okay. That's perfectly acceptable. And he hides that answer in, well, we shouldn't discriminate against anybody. Well, no, we shouldn't. Absolutely. But we also shouldn't be promoting the idea of a child that hasn't reached puberty yet. And that doesn't mean you don't start showing signs of who you're going to be in terms of sexuality. Because, of course, kids before they reach puberty do show some signs. But making any decisions about the future of their life is dangerous at that age. I think it should be left till adulthood so that they have 100% say in that. But whether you think it should be 14 or 16 or 18, it shouldn't be 8. Her younger child, she was speaking of her younger child. The younger child was 8 years old. And that's perfectly okay with him, or he just chose not to touch on that part of it. So, you know, again, the overarching question of rights and whatever, those are conversations to be had, definitely so, regardless of what side of this you fall on. But this idea of an 8-year-old child being, you as a parent knowing what their ultimate gender is going to be, it's disturbing to me. And again, I don't know this woman. I don't know her story. So I don't put anything negative on her that I can't discern from the words that I heard her say. But, you know, we've heard these stories of, you know, hormone therapies and all kinds of things, which are just terribly dangerous to these kids. And again, because so many of these situations, it turns out that the child is actually straight and goes on to lead a more conventional life. I'm trying to avoid normal because I don't want to sound, you know, like I'm comparing normality and abnormality. That's not what I would mean. But what is more traditionally normal life, you can't always discern that from the behavior of an 8-year-old child, but you can ruin their future if you guess. And so that's disturbing. I think that a lot of people miss that in that answer. Frankly, for ABC to even take that question is a little odd. I guess they have a base that they're playing to, and that's what they want to hear. Most of us, it just doesn't affect most of us. And that doesn't mean they don't have rights. Again, I shouldn't have to preface these things, but it's not a big national issue whether or not you're transgender 8-year-old is going to get to serve in the military. It's just, it doesn't do anything for us to get to the problems that our nation faces. So that one's a little bit troubling. So let's move over to Trump. And actually, this doesn't come from the debate as much as it just comes from something that happened over the last couple of days. I don't know how many of you know who the Babylon Bee is. The Babylon Bee is a satirical site. So they put out fake headlines and fake news stories, but it's satire. It's not fake news. It's a joke. It's an SNL skit. It's not intended to be real. But so there was a story that was, Twitter shuts down entire network to slow spread of negative Biden news. Now, of course, that's in reference to this New York Post story that came out that they've got a bunch of emails from Hunter Biden that prove certain things. I guess there was some pictures and some video, and I don't know if this story is real or not. Frankly, despite what a lot on the left would say, the New York Post has actually a pretty good record of being a legitimate news source. They're one of the oldest papers in the country. I'm sure more is going to come out on this, on how the legitimacy of what they found. But apparently a computer was left in a computer repair shop, so to speak, and it was never picked up, and the owner, you know, tried to contact the person that left the computer there for repairs, and you know, as a lot of that stuff goes, if you're not paid for a job, eventually the property becomes yours, or, you know, something to that effect, or at least you're able to seize it. And, you know, again, I'm sure it varies state to state. And it was turned over to the FBI, but also a copy of a lot of this was given to Rudy Giuliani, who is one of Trump's lawyers. And that's where I start to question the validity. A lot of the pieces that are in this fit together, but when Rudy Giuliani's involved, the doubt meter kind of starts to peg a little bit. Rudy Giuliani was a great mayor of New York, did a great job as mayor of New York. Rudy Giuliani today, not the same guy that he was, you know, years ago. And so because of his involvement, it makes me a little suspicious. Some of the things that are in there are almost too right on the money. We've known about this story for some time. In fact, we know because former Vice President Biden bragged about his firing of getting the prosecutor in Ukraine fired. And of course, his son was working for a company that was being investigated by that same prosecutor. So we know the story, but the pieces kind of fit together a little too tightly. So that makes me a little suspicious. But none of that really matters to the fact that the reason it became such a big news story is because Twitter in particular, but Twitter and Facebook both, really clamped down on the story and wouldn't let it be distributed. Facebook kind of slowed it down. Twitter actually completely stopped it. You couldn't even link it in their messaging on their messaging platform, let alone on the main Twitter site. Pretty unprecedented in what they did, because it hadn't been fact-checked yet. They just did it, you know, kind of unilaterally. So that's been a huge story that the right-leaning news outlets have been all over. The more mainstream left-leaning outfits, and I say mainstream because the big networks that most of us see, you know, whether we want to or not, you know, they are left-leaning, whether we want to admit it or not. And they've kind of stayed away from this for the most part. But what became the big story was the social media platforms became the story. And so, again, going back to the Babylon Bee, they said Twitter shuts down entire network to slow spread of negative Biden news. Well, Trump retweeted the Babylon Bee story, which it's a satirical website. And I want to think that he knew that it was satirical, but it doesn't seem like he did. So that got a little bit crazy. He's taken quite a bit of blowback from this, and rightfully so. You unless you're making it very clear that you know it's satire, and he didn't. What he said in the tweet sounded like he thought that was real. I don't know. He's tried to clarify it a little bit, but not the best look. The one thing I did find kind of interesting is when I did a quick search on this story, and some of these headlines, when you look them up online, are pretty interesting. And I wish I had a co-host or a guest here today. We could play a little match the media outlet to the news story, because these headlines are kind of amusing, to say the least. Take, for instance, Slate: Trump, not much of a reader, tweets story from satirical site, the rest of it's cut off, but it doesn't really matter. You know, it's not an unfair jab at the president to call him not much of a reader, but nonetheless, you know, you would expect that from Slate. Mediaite: Trump shares fake Babylon Bee story on Twitter helping Biden. Well, it's not a fake Babylon Bee story because all Babylon Bee stories are fake. It's satire. That's the point of satire. Now, admittedly, many stories on Babylon Bee are satirical, but they're so close to the truth because the truth has gotten so ridiculous that I can see where you might not know the difference, but calling the Babylon Bee fake is like calling the Onion fake or calling the Patriots cheaters, but I digress. And then I think another one of my favorite ones from the news organization that we all turn to for the undisputed best news, Teen Vogue, and their headline, Trump tweeted literal fake news story from satirical site. Well, I suppose that satire is literal fake news. But yeah, I found some of those interesting. So I got a little more to say about this, but we'll take another break and we'll come back and wrap things up after the break.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. The federal budget deficit hit an all-time high of $3.1 trillion in the 2020 budget year, more than double the previous record, as the coronavirus pandemic cut revenues and sent spending soaring. The Trump administration reported Friday that the deficit for the budget year that ended September 30th was three times the size of last year's deficit of $984 billion. It was also $2 trillion higher than the administration had estimated in February before the pandemic hit. It surpassed the previous record of $1.4 trillion set in 2009 when the Obama administration was spending heavily. On Wall Street, a mixed day as the Dow was up by 112 points to 28,606. The NASDAQ, however, dropped 42, the S&P 500 up a fraction. More details at srnnews.com.
Keeping you informed, giving you the good news. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
Oh, I wish there was a way to find out what events are going on in Rogue River.
There is.
There is?
Yeah, the website for 94.3 The Bridge.
They have Rogue River events on their website?
Yeah, for Gold Hill, Weimar, and Grants Pass, too. You can even submit your own event for everyone in town to see. And if it's on the website, they automatically talk about it on the radio, too.
That's awesome. What's the address to this site?
It's 943thebridge.com.
N-I-N...
No. Just type the numbers. 943thebridge.com.
Oh, 943thebridge.com. Hey, look, they have the latest local news on there, too.
They have everything on there. 943thebridge.com.
My savings are gone.
Okay, where were they last?
Here, right before I spent them on that vacation to Aruba.
Weird. Not weird. Not saving now means no money later. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
With the SRN News Business Brief, I'm George Manzani. In their town hall broadcast, President Trump and Joe Biden did touch on some of their economic priorities. Mr. Biden in Philadelphia was asked about his position on fracking, vital in the battleground state of Pennsylvania. His response, trying to reconcile his proposed clean energy goals, which he says vary from those of the Green New Deal. President Trump warns that Mr. Biden would end fracking, thus diminishing U.S. energy independence and decimating jobs. President Trump was in Miami and was asked to explain the merits of lower corporate tax rates. The president responded saying that his administration had lowered those rates to reach comparable international levels. The result fostered strong job growth, which had reached a five-decade low under 4% in the U.S. The president says proposed Democratic tax increases would create what he terms a Biden depression. Wall Street closed down yesterday, the S&P off 5, the Dow down 20, and the NASDAQ down 55. With SRN Business, I'm George Manzani.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk, and let's continue with our look at the competing town halls from last night between the President of the United States and the former Vice President. So let's get to our next sound clip. Let's go back to former Vice President Biden, and he was asked about police and police tactics and so on, and we don't hear the question here, but let's take a listen to this.
We can do this. You can ban chokeholds. You can, but beyond that, you have to teach people how to de-escalate circumstances. De-escalate. So instead of anybody coming at you, and the first thing you do is shoot to kill, you shoot them in the leg.
Okay, I got to jump in. He goes from the word de-escalate to the first thing you do is shoot somebody. What? Where does he get this stuff from? I mean, I'm going to play the rest of this, but that, and not to mention the words shoot to kill. No police officer is taught to shoot to kill. You shoot to stop. You aim for center mass for two reasons. One, you're trying to stop the threat, and two, your best chance at hitting your target is aiming for the largest part of that target, which is center mass on a human being. You do that to stop them, and you do that to limit the chances of collateral damage, of shooting a bystander or something else. Police officers are not taught to shoot to kill. They're taught to shoot to stop the threat, and they're not shooting people as the first thing they do, as he just said. But he said de-escalation. He's going to go on. Let's listen to the rest of this.
There's ways you have to do more background checks in terms of whether or not the person coming in passes certain psychological test. And the last thing I'll say, and I'm sorry because it was really, I think, really, really important, is you have to be in a position where you are able to identify the things that have to change. And one of the things that has to change is so many cops get called into circumstances where somebody is mentally off. Like what happened not long ago, that guy with the knife. That's why we have to provide within police departments psychologists and social workers to go out with the cops on those calls.
Okay, the example he uses. Now, I'm not going to argue against more funding for social services that can be helpful with people with mental illness and police officers. Come across many, many people with mental illness. Much of the homeless population have mental illness and interact with the police on a regular basis. But the example he just gave was the guy with the knife. Now, he's talking about the guy, I believe, in Kenosha that had already been tased, walked around the car, ignoring the police officers, and reached in the car to grab a knife before he was shot to death. But what's a social worker going to do with a guy with a knife? You're going to send a social worker to take care of the guy with the knife? What's the social worker going to do? The social worker is after the police. I'm sorry, but a guy with a knife, that the police were called. Let's use that specific instance. The police were called because he had assaulted a woman and he had a restraining order against him. And so the police were there because he was a dangerous person. And that's why we send the police. The social worker comes in later. You send the social worker there in this situation, the social worker ends up stabbed to death. So I don't know what he's talking about. I'm not going to play the rest of that bite, but that one, that again, when it comes to this police and de-escalation and refunding and all of that, I don't want to be disrespectful, but former Vice President Biden has no idea what he's talking about. And every time he speaks on this subject, he's so far off the mark. So before we run out of time, let's get to another one that, this is going to be from the Trump town hall, and I don't think he handled this particularly well, but I also think it was not really, it's not a big thing, but you can listen and decide for yourself.
actually don't
know
what they're
doing. While we're denouncing, let me ask you about QAnon. It is this theory that Democrats are a satanic pedophile ring and that you are the savior of that. Now, can you just once and for all state that that is completely not true and disavow QAnon in its entirety?
I know nothing about QAnon.
I just told you.
I know very little. You told me, but what you tell me doesn't necessarily make it fact. I hate to say that. I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia. They fight it very hard, but I know nothing about it.
They believe it is a satanic cult run by the deep state.
Study the subject. I'll tell you what I do know about. I know about Antifa, and I know about the radical left, and I know how violent they are and how vicious they are, and I know how they're burning down cities run by...
So he kind of turns the question to talk about Antifa and BLM, and you know, and that's fine, because, I mean, QAnon is a non-issue. Now, I had never heard about it until the media actually started asking the president about it. And I mean, I'm on, you know, they call it far right. I don't really know what that means. I mean, I know what they think it means, but there's anything that they don't like, you know, in this case, they call it far right because they purportedly support the president. So that therefore makes it far right. But nonetheless, I had never heard of it until they started asking the president about it. And while I think he knows a little more than what he's saying there, it's not an issue. Nobody, I'm on a lot of different blogs and sites for, you know, conservative thought and for liberal thought. I mean, I'm all over the internet, and I virtually did not hear about QAnon until the media started asking the president about it. So it's a non-issue. He should have just, I mean, again, the president doesn't, anytime that he's asked to do something, he resists, especially by the media. You know, if you pointed at a clearly blue sky and you were a member of the media and you said, President Trump, call that sky blue, he would say something completely different. So that's just his personality. And so, unfortunately, in this case, he didn't give the best answer. But at the same time, QAnon is really a non-issue. So I don't think that we gained a whole lot from last night. You know, hopefully the next debate goes off and that would be, I think that would be good for everybody. I mentioned before that COVID relief is still up in the air. The only thing I'll say about that, the amount of money they're talking about is unreal. We're spending so much money we don't have. The bill needs to be focused on helping those that need. And that first round of stimulus bills, they sent me money that I frankly don't want. I don't need. I've been deemed essential. I'm still getting paid. I'm still working. While lots of things in my life have changed because of COVID, I haven't been financially affected by it. So a lot of this money that they're trying to spend in these bills is being wasted. It's unfortunate. I wish they would just take care of what needs the people that need the help and quit with all this other baloney. They do separate bills, get people taken care of, quit sending money to people that don't need it. And, you know, that loan program, the last I had heard, there was still a bunch of money in that. So, you know, either adjust it so it's going to help more people that really need it, or don't do another one. Whatever the right answer is, I don't know. But spending trillions of more dollars when our annual, you know, GDP, I mean, we're going to end up spending well over how can we spend more money than normally goes through our GDP? It's just unfathomable how inept our government has become, and fighting over this bill over trillions of dollars is just immoral. And they need to fix that. The Supreme Court Amy Coney Barrett, I think, is a wonderful candidate. She did a great job. I had a soundbite I wanted to play, but we're not going to get to it. But she did a great job in those hearings. I'm a contextualist. I want the Constitution to be upheld or to be applied with its meaning, the original meaning that was intended when whichever part of it was written. And I think she'll do that. That's all the time we've got. So everybody be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's hometown voice,
94.3 The Bridge,
or on demand at 94.3 The Bridge.